Hello and welcome to Press TV's News Analysis, coming to you from Tehran. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Thanks so much for joining us. Well, a race without competition is not considered much of a race. However, that hasn't stopped countries like the United States and Saudi Arabia from praising Yemen for the holding of presidential elections with only one candidate. And that one candidate, Abdurrabbu Mansour Hadi, has been sworn in, while many in Yemen continue to demand an end to and trial of all remnants of the Saleh regime. What's next for the Yemeni revolution? Stay with us.
The new president has been elected in an uncontested vote with a turnout of around 50%. The US and its allies in the region all supported the single-candidate election and its inevitable outcome. The Saudi-backed regime in Sana'a was also content with the result and sought to exaggerate the turnout. The election was met with deadly violence and widespread boycotts. From the north to the south, opponents of the vote called on voters not to take part in the controversial election. A UK-trained army officer, the 65-year-old Hadi, was recently promoted to field marshal. He served as Saleh's vice president for 17 years and became acting president in November, when a Western-backed deal brokered by Saudi Arabia paved the way for Saleh's exit. The deal would offer the longtime dictator immunity from prosecution if he relinquished power in favor of his deputy. The appointment of Hadi as Yemen's new president officially makes Saleh the fourth Arab leader to be removed from power in more than a year of regional revolutions and uprisings. Since February last year, a large number of protesters have lost their lives in the Yemeni revolution, although international organizations and the United Nations never gave exact figures. This as they have focused on the unrest in Syria, updating their figures on a daily basis, numbers that many from inside Syria call highly exaggerated.
I'd like to welcome my guest to the program from London, from the Yemeni National Consul, Mr. Mohammed Qubbati. From Washington, Arthur, an historian, Mr. Webster Tarpley. And from Beirut, Middle East expert, hello, Mr. Hayyan Haider. Thank you all for being with us. Well, let's start this off in London with Mr. Qubbati. Now, regarding the swearing-in of Hadi, some Western media sites have headlined with, quote, Washington loses its man in Yemen. Is this an accurate account of what has actually taken place as Saleh has actually been replaced by his hand-picked successor? How do you see it?
I think we have got to look from it from another angle as well. I think whatever we could say, there was a turnout there, quite a considerable turnout for the elections. But people didn't see that as an election for Hadi. I think people who turned out there to vote, they were voting for a change. They were asking for a change, you know. And I think the man now who has been chosen as a caretaker by Saleh, obviously, and agreed by the opposition, is shouldering quite a big responsibility. I think he has felt that kind of responsibility with his speech after being sworn in. He said that if we don't deal with the challenges, practically chaos will reign. So he, obviously he understands that there's many, many challenges in front of him, and the kind of legitimacy which has been given to him by the people who have voted for change would now give him the right choice, for hopefully, to go forward with to prevent any chaos or anarchy to prevail in the country, as he has said himself. I think that there are many, many challenges, not least of them the restructuring of the armed forces and the security forces, the upcoming national reconciliation dialogue. There should be a wide and an inclusive comprehensive dialogue which should involve us in the south, the southerners, as well as the Houthis in the north,
okay,
so as to go forward for a real change.
If the change doesn't happen, let me just jump in here and switch over to Washington. What about that, Mr. Tarpley, a real change? Now, our guest in London is saying that the tone now of Mr. Hadi has been conciliatory. However, he was in a one-man competition for the election. How much of a real change can actually be expected in Yemen?
I don't expect any change from Mr. Hadi. He seems to have been part of the Saleh inner circle, and he perpetuates a government where lots of members of the Saleh family still have important posts. But I think we have to focus on the tragedy of this country. It is desperately poor. It is a tribal society. It is tormented by U.S. bombing and drone attacks. It's in a terrible situation with the Houthi rebels in the north and a Marxist secessionist movement in Aden in the south. I would focus on the need to break out of the current system. The United States essentially created al-Qaeda in Yemen deliberately. They sent over this guy al-Awlaki. Al-Awlaki was a double agent, so obvious perhaps that he had to be liquidated in order to hide how much the U.S. had contributed to creating this branch of al-Qaeda. Various Guantanamo alumni were sent over, Shiri and others. So this whole AQAP, al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula, is a creation of the U.S. So on the one side, we have this artificial group created, which nevertheless then gets support and traction. On the other side, we have the Saleh establishment, the only cash cow for the officials and generals of the Saleh establishment is to do anti-terrorism. So we get the whole endless conflict of bombing, strafing, vendettas, revenge, and so forth. This essentially never ends, and it's designed to lead to the destruction of Yemen. It's designed to lead to failed states, mini states, micro states, warlords, what have you. And the goal for the U.S. is to keep a certain number of assets, to keep some bases, to control the way up into the Red Sea towards the Suez Canal, but in particular to keep everybody else out. If you have a bunch of micro states and mini states, the main thing the U.S. will want to do is keep the Chinese out. China would be very happy to add Yemen to the string of pearls that they have across the Indian Ocean. The U.S. policy says better to destroy the whole place and have it sink into chaos rather than have a reasonable chance. The country needs rural electrification. Above all, they need water. There's going to be a water shortage, which is going to be deadly for everybody. And, of course, the obvious roads, schools, and hospitals and other fundamental.
All right, let me turn to
Beirut,
Mr. Tarpley. Let me turn
south,
on to Beirut.
About this, and he's...
All right, Mr. Haydat, your perspective with this. What our guest in Washington, Mr. Tarpley, has just said is that the United States prefer it to be total chaotic situation than to have the country turned over to another entity. What's your take on that? Do you think it is in the United States' interest right now for the country to be in chaos?
I think I quite agree with our colleague from Washington, especially about al-Qaeda coming into Yemen. He said they created it over there, and it looks quite obvious. Since September 11, let's go back to the origin of what is called terrorism. Since September 11, we know that out of the suspects in conflict 2022, most of them were Yemenis, some of them were Saudis as well. And we asked them, you know, who took in the first place bin Laden to Afghanistan under another umbrella in the 80s, but then this is what happened now. And who bombed the USS Cole in southern Yemen, in the Yemeni seas, before the U.S. entered Iraq in 2003. But I have to go back to what President Bush said about creative chaos. I mean, Bush administration, not alone, you know. And this is one very clear aspect of it. And I'm afraid there is another aspect they are trying to introduce, like what's happening in Iraq. They are trying to have it in Syria as well, you know. But this is a very clear example of what's going on there. And the Yemenis really are looking at a sort of a referendum, you know. Even the numbers, I mean, it's like an insult to human intelligence.
You okay.
You talk about a referendum or elections, and there is only one candidate.
Well, let me toss that over to London. Let me toss that over to London. What about that? You seem, sir, optimistic now about what you said now that Mr. Hadi has taken over. What about what our guest in Beirut saying, that the referendum in general was an insult to the Yemeni people and the intelligence of the average person there? Your take, sir.
Yes, I think this we should remember that this is sort of an arrangement, because there's no true elections there. The president, I mean, the man who is going to take charge is going to only take charge for 2 years and for a specific task, the most important of which I have said, the framing of a new constitution.
Let me just jump in here. You said only for 2 years. But during that 2 years, why wouldn't the Yemeni people be able to elect the person of choice, even for a transitional situation?
That's a very good question. As I've said, let's not forget that the Yemen was about on the verge of an internal strife and war. We had the army was completely longitudinally fractioned, and we had two opposing factions. The only other option was to get confrontation and perhaps run into chaos. But I would just like to remind my friend in Beirut that out of the 22 people who were involved in the September 11 events, there was not 18 Yemenis. There were 18 Saudis, for sure, not Yemenis. But yes, we could say that Bin Laden is of Yemeni origins, if you want to say that. But the thing which I would like, I'm speaking from London. I'm just here only 2 days ago or yesterday. They have finished a new conference to try and settle the situation in Somalia. If the U.S. and the Western powers are actually aiming at getting chaos into this area, why should they settle the score in Somalia? They should have allowed the situation continue there, because that affects very much the situation in Yemen. Any settlement of the situation in Somalia actually would affect. And I think that creating chaos and destabilization in Yemen it would work not for the interest of the regional powers, neither the global powers. This is a very important geopolitic asset for the whole world. If everybody destabilizes, nobody is a winner. Everybody would lose. And that's the argument I have got to take to both our friends in Beirut and in Washington.
All right, let me turn to Mr. Tarpley, because you seem like you're reacting a little bit to comments made in London. Your take on what Mr. Gorbatsky has just said.
Well, I just have to point out, Zbigniew Brzezinski, who is one of the major theoreticians, kind of the eminence grise of the Democratic Party foreign policy establishment, is openly on record calling for microstates, mini-states, that this is the path to dignity, to have a state that corresponds to every little ethnic peculiarity that you have. Look what the United States has actually done in Libya. That's chaos. Look at Iraq. It's increasingly clear that there's a good element of chaos going on there. Look at the NATO death squads that have been sent into Syria for the purpose of wrecking the entire country. And we could go on. Look at Sudan carved into two parts. Look at other cases. Pakistan, a candidate to be carved into four parts. The use of the drones, by the way, is a giveaway. The drones have nothing to do with terrorism. The drones are designed to goad and inflame populations to the point of rebellion, civil war, and so forth. They tend to blame it on the central government, if there is one, as is happening in Yemen. And that's wherever you see those drones, those are countries that are targeted for destabilization. There's a story about a secret U.S. drone base, which is somewhere in the Arabian Peninsula. Some people say it's in Oman. Some people say it's in Saudi Arabia. It might be in Yemen. From which a lot of this drone activity is going on. And that simply means to try to destroy these countries as functioning entities.
So you're saying, Mr. Tarpley, a classic take on divide and conquer. This is what the United States is basically doing, in your perspective?
An extreme version. An extreme version of divide and conquer. It's kind of a scorched earth policy. If U.S. imperialism is too weak to hold on to all of these countries, then scorched earth is what the Chinese will find when they get there.
And Mr. Haidar, what exactly does that mean now for the people in Yemen? If this really is the policy that is being implemented in Yemen by the United States, what exactly is next for the people in Yemen? Where do they stand at this point in time?
Well, I think I have to go back to what has been said so far from our colleagues in Washington and London. I apologize about the numbers. Maybe the numbers were 18 for the Saudis and the rest for the Yemenis. But anyway, the main, the bulk of the whatever was called terrorists was from these two countries anyway. Second, I feel that the U.S. is quite at ease with the creative chaos in the area. As Mr. Kobati, I don't agree that they want the good and well-being of the Yemeni people. They are getting out of the Arabian Peninsula. Don't forget that. And since they couldn't control after they had this hegemony of 20 years all over the world with their economies and their policies, etc. Now it's time for them to get out. So it's sort of a revenge. They put the whole area into chaos, and then they hope that they will come back when the financial situation will allow them to do more military ventures in here or there in the area. They don't really care about the welfare of the Yemeni people or of the rest. But I would like to look at the Yemeni people there. You said that this was a transitionary period of 2 years for this new president. I remind you that there has been already a year plus which went into real big turmoil and fighting and killing. The Yemeni people have really paid a big, big price for what has happened, for change to happen, and change didn't happen. In fact, just today and yesterday, there were killings just next to the palace of Mukalla in South Yemen. And I would like to ask you, who is at the head of the Republican Guards? If it's Mr. Ahmed, who is the son of Ali Abdullah Saleh, and the rest of them are still all over there, and 3 years plus that are to go on after the so-called Yemeni revolution is almost the term of a U.S. president, which is 4 years. So 3 years is already a big time for a revolution to take place, to make the necessary changes and this. And I have my own theory, which I have experienced in Lebanon after 30 years. And we've had Taif, you remember, a new constitution in 1989.
30 more seconds, Mr. Haddad. I'm limited in time. 30 seconds. Go ahead. Finish your thoughts.
Yes, and we're still fighting all over the place. I say in Yemen, in Lebanon, all over the place, you don't have the right to give the problems, to delay these problems to the coming up generations. You should solve them now.
Okay.
What you're doing now, you're buying some peace, but the kids of your kids will pay for it later on if you don't solve the problem
what
now.
What about that in London, Mr. Kobati?
I agree. I mean, nobody is there. I mean, the United States of America is not a charity organization to come and help us. I agree. They're coming for their own interest. But sometimes interests do crossroads. And I'm really surprised if these people wanted, as my friend said in Washington, I'm from the South, you know, if these people wanted really to fraction and to divide Yemen, why don't they allow us in the South to divide? I mean, why don't they allow the secessionist movement in the South? They are against it. They say they are with the Yemeni unification of Yemeni federalism and so on. So there are a lot of issues there. But I agree with all my friends. The Yemenis have got to stand out and find that there are there. The revolution has been started by the youths. The youths have got to continue in the squares and in the streets so that their revolution is not robbed away by any force, either regional or international. Obviously, this would be a very futile exercise if 7 million people nearly, or 6.5 million people went to vote for a change, and then it turns out to be a futile exercise. It was only a change of Saleh, and then leaving the whole regime intact. That is really quite a serious scenario, and obviously the Yemeni people would not at all accept it. They will continue the revolution, and the youths, and the world powers and the regional powers have got to understand that they are working against history, and they will lose eventually if that is what they mean. by this whole exercise.
Okay, Mr. Tarpley, about 45 seconds now. Why is there a difference in the way we see that things are being handled in Yemen by the West and some of their Arab proxies, as opposed to Syria? We see that in Syria there are many things going on, but in Yemen they try to get the PGCC countries and to basically force upon the people of Yemen an agreement that the majority of people didn't even want. So why the difference? Why do we see this difference so close together in area?
Well, every country has to have a destabilization scenario tailored to create the maximum of mayhem and creative chaos, as has rightly been said, on the ground. In the case of Yemen, you've got to make the Saudis think that it's going to benefit them, even though in reality it won't. I would say, though, in terms of solutions for all this, we're living through big changes in international politics. The emergence of that China-Russia bloc in the United Nations, voting against the attack on Syria several times. The other countries, Iran, Syria, Pakistan, Venezuela, the ALBA group, quite a number of others who have joined that. That's now a counterpole, and we may be going back towards a situation something like what we had in the Cold War. We had the U.S. on the one side and the Soviets on the other, and that meant that there was some kind of margin of maneuver for countries like Yemen in the middle. And I think creative leadership would be look towards that, look towards inviting the U.S. to leave, or certainly severely diminishing the U.S. presence.
And on that note, I'm so sorry, we are out of time. I'd like to thank all my guests, Mr. Mohammed Qutbati in London, Mr. Webster Tarpley in Washington, and Mr. Hayyan Haidar in Beirut. Thank you all for being with us here in this news analysis. And thank you, viewers. Join us same place, same time, right here tomorrow on tomorrow's news analysis. I'm Marzia Hashimi, signing out for myself and all the crew here in Tehran. Thanks so much for being with us. And goodbye.